Colvin. Ms. Sherman.
May it please the Court. My name is Martina Sherman, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Robert Hoyt in his appeal of the District Court's decision to affirm the denial of his claim for Social Security disability benefits. The administrative law judge's decision was not supported by substantial evidence and must be reversed for four reasons.
Before you get into your four reasons, one of the things you stress is that, at least from a date point of view, the standard for disability benefits and the standard for supplemental security income benefits are different. I wonder if you could say a word about that.
Yes, Your Honor. To qualify for disability insurance benefits, Hoyt would have had to establish an onset date of prior to 2013, actually December 31st, 2013. To qualify for supplemental security income, Hoyt need only establish his eligibility as of the time of his application for disability benefits, which was in August of 2007.
2003.
Yeah, 2003, not 2013, wasn't it?
For disability.
Sorry, 2003.
Sure, yeah.
13 makes it.
Like right now. So there's a much, so he has to show before his date last insured for the disability benefits, 2003, but for the supplemental security income, it's tied to the date when he filed his application?
That's correct, Your Honor. Although Hoyt alleged the same date of onset in both his disability insurance benefits application and his supplemental security income application, the standard for awarding benefits only requires that he demonstrate that he was disabled as of his date of application.
So, I mean, the reason that's interesting is because a lot of the medical testimony in the record seems to indicate that over the decade, so to speak, of the 2000s, his condition keeps getting worse. I mean, it's a degenerative back condition. You get up to Dr. Bird's 2009 assessment, severely limited range of motion and so forth, and you can see the picture is somewhat different than it is way back in 2003.
That's correct, Your Honor. Although my client does have documented evidence of low back degeneration dating to at least 2001, in 2007, merely months before he submitted his application for disability benefits, he testified that he developed a new tingling sensation in his right arm, as well as stiffness and pain in his neck and the right shoulder. Although my client has been struggling with low back pain since 2000, this onset of new cervical spine pain, the combined effect of that with his low back pain did render him totally unable to perform even part-time work, as documented in the treatment notes of Dr. Bird, as well as in the records at Stroger Hospital, where he underwent an epidural spine injection. And also documented in his 2007 cervical MRI, which showed cervical stenosis as well as congenital narrowing of the cervical spine, and by a 2008 lumbar MRI, which showed neuroforaminal narrowing at the L5-S1 level.
I want to ask you about that 2008 MRI. It seems like it's inconsistent with an electromyogram that was done the same year.
Your Honor, the electromyogram was done in 2008. However, that was on Hoyt's hands, and the lumbar MRI would be corroborating evidence of the complaints he has of pain and tingling in his right leg.
And it's different nerves, basically, that you're looking at the nerve conduction in the hand.
Correct,
versus,
Your Honor.
Yeah.
Is that related to stenosis?
The cervical stenosis would corroborate his complaints of pain and tingling in his right arm. It's true that the EMG finding was normal, although I would note that the EMG was performed probably less than 9 months after the onset of this new tingling and pain, and that it may take significant time for the demyelinating effects of that radiculopathy to manifest itself in an electromyogram.
How far apart were the EMR and the MRI?
the EMG was performed in February of 2008. The lumbar, the cervical MRI was performed in July of 2007.
So if he prevailed on both of these claims, he gets two separate checks, and if he prevails only on SSI, he gets one check that's different?
Not exactly, Your Honor. If my client were to be awarded disability insurance benefits dating back to his onset date of 2000, those benefits would be larger in amount than his supplemental security income benefits. And since SSI is contingent upon having an income of less than $1,000, the amount of the SSI check would be completely offset by the amount of the SSDI check, the disability insurance benefit. In this case, the administrative law judge's credibility determination was compromised by her reliance on objective factors, including Mr. Hoyt's failure to seek medical attention between 2001 and 2007. Yet the administrative law judge never inquired as to why Hoyt failed to seek medical attention during that time period.
So you make that point. You also make the point that she doesn't adequately grapple with Dr. Bird's opinion. And I thought you were also thirdly making the point that she commits the, in a sense, legal error of not evaluating separately a later possible onset date.
That's correct, Your Honor. The administrative law judge relied primarily, in her credibility determination, she relied primarily on activities which predated my client's 2007 application, such as his attendance at college classes, his failure to seek medical attention, his the chores that he performed for his uncle. All of the evidence since 2007.
What sort of medical attention could he sought out? Just for the pain that he had?
That's correct, Your Honor. Presumably, if my client had the means, he would have been able to seek attention from a neurologist or perhaps a pain medicine specialist and seek an epidural steroid injection. The record reflects that in 2000...
Sometimes they won't give those.
That's correct, Your Honor, but my client has undergone... I believe four epidural steroid injections prior to his alleged onset date, as well as two sacroiliac joint injections, which he was able to afford because he had submitted a workers' compensation claim at the time. However, the evidence reflects that my client could not afford medical attention and also structured his activities of daily living so as to minimize his symptoms of pain. But when he developed this new onset of cervical pain and tingling in his right arm, the combined effects of those of his lower back pain and his cervical pain made it such that he was compelled to seek medical attention, driving up to an hour to obtain free care at Stroger Hospital.
Okay, if you'd like to save any rebuttal time.
Yes, Your Honor, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Kristoff.
May it please the Court, Edward Kristoff on behalf of the Commissioner. This is the sort of decision that this court asks Social Security to produce. The ALJ doesn't use the boilerplate language that the court has been critical of in the past. The ALJ provides a lengthy and explicit explanation for her credibility assessment. The ALJ directly addresses the treating physician opinion that contradicts the ALJ's findings in the case. The ALJ thoroughly reviews all of the significant evidence in the record. This is the kind of decision that has to be affirmed.
But does the ALJ refer to medical opinions contrary to the treating?
Yes, the ALJ refers to the opinion of the state agency reviewing physicians. The ALJ refers to the opinion of the consultative examiner, Dr. Montani. The ALJ refers to the opinion of a neurologist, or it wasn't an opinion, it was an observation of a neurologist who found no neurological problems. So we have a gentleman who is complaining of significant neurological problems, but when he's submitted to neurological tests, whether those are clinical tests or whether they are objective diagnostic tests, they're not substantiating his complaints.
And ALJ, I think I'm afraid the ALJ is lumping together dissimilar things, though. I mean, to do an EMG tests nerve conduction in the area that's being tested. It doesn't test nerve conduction in the entire body. And the MRI wasn't asking the same question. So it of course gives it a different answer. I'm concerned about that, and I'm actually mostly concerned about the ALJ's failure to assess from the date of application forward. I can see giving her the benefit of the doubt that this man gets worse and worse as the 2000s progress. But by the time you get to 2007, he really is severely limited, and she's looking at these daily activities like the college attendance without fully taking into account that he's really not there most of the time. He's doing it online. He's showing up when he can. He's not behaving the way a person could behave at work.
Well, if I could address your questions in order. First, with regard to the MRI versus the electromyogram nerve conduction study. His complaint was that he was getting pain and tingling in his arm and that was resulting in problems with dexterity and grip strength and those sorts of things. And so the EMG test was performed to see how the congenital problem he had with his cervical spine affected the functioning of his arm. And that test showed no functional result from any of his congenital spine problem. So the electromyogram test was a key piece of evidence for the ALJ to rely on in determining whether there was a functional result of this congenital problem. You know, there are many people walking around with degenerative problems in their spine that have no functional limitations as a result of that. And so that's why we have those diagnostic tests and we have the clinical examinations. And aside from a physical therapist who is not an acceptable medical source, all of the other medical personnel that examined this gentleman found essentially nothing on a clinical basis. They found that he had good grip strength. They found that he had no spasm. His sensation was normal. His strength was normal. His range of motion was essentially normal.
But and he's in pain, though, and an EMG detects only certain types of nerve dysfunctions. You're ignoring the other tests. You're ignoring the spinal stenosis and the all these things, this neural foramina narrowing that goes on, which causes pain.
I don't mean to give the impression I'm ignoring any tests, Your Honor.
You're setting them to one side. You're saying, well, I guess it doesn't matter how much pain he's in. He's fine because he can have a good grip.
Well, obviously, pain is subjective, Your Honor, and also is obviously...
And we've said it counts in these
matters. A test that takes a picture of someone's spine and shows the structure of the bones and the other parts of the body can't tell us whether someone is in pain. It also can't tell us...
And I guess that's what troubles me. So a person in pain goes to a treating physician, which he does here with Dr. Bird, and the ALJ discounts Dr. Bird's assessment as being... lacking in critical evaluation of the patient, and it's not supported by objective findings, but in fact it was. The MRI provides some support to how Dr. Bird evaluates that.
Well, the MRI shows degeneration, but it doesn't show impingement on any nerves. It doesn't show impingement on the spinal cord.
It shows narrowing of the cervical spinal cord and moderate to severe narrowing of the neural foramina, and that when they get narrowed, there's not as much room for the nerve to pass through.
I agree, Your Honor, but it does not show impingement, and it could. It could have shown impingement.
You think he was faking it when he goes to all of these doctors for these various epidural injections? Seems unlikely. No one says that. There's no evidence that he's getting needless medical treatment or that doctors are being bamboozled into giving him treatment they shouldn't.
Well, Your Honor, he has to show that he was disabled. And the objective.
I'm saying indirect evidence that he really is in pain is the seeking out of and obtaining medical relief for that pain.
Well, but this gentleman claims that he was in debilitating pain since 2000.
Yeah.
And he was engaging in significant activities for a significant portion of that period of time. And while the claimant wants to bifurcate that period and say that, well, I may not have been so bad off during this one period of time. I initially said I was disabled, but now really, truly, I am in bad shape and I'm disabled.
He's saying, you know, there's a line drawing here, and maybe he doesn't make it over the line by the date last insured. That's what the ALJ thinks, you know, deference and all of that. Maybe he doesn't make it over the line, but things keep going downward. That's what happens with back problems. And so he's saying, even if... he said, I think I'm over the line the whole time, but even if you don't, you need to evaluate independently in 2007.
And what do we find in 2007? We find the negative electrodiagnostic test, we find the negative clinical examinations, and we find Dr. Berg...
Now, which clinical examinations are negative? The state people don't examine him.
No. When he went...
Read the file.
When he went to Aunt Martha's Free Clinic, and he went to Stroger Hospital and their outpatient clinics, when they examined him and did their clinical testing, they were, for the most part, normal. They didn't find clinical abnormalities in this person who was claiming debilitating functional impairments. And so whether you're looking at the period before 2007 or after 2007, the evidence just isn't there to back up his claims of debilitating limitations. The ALJ explained that she was discrediting Dr. Berg because of that lack of underlying evidence, and while the court referred earlier to the significant reduction in his range of motion, what Dr. Berg actually says in that report when she's explaining her reasoning, she points to limitation in range of motion of the spine, 60 degrees/90 degrees, flexion. Well, normal flexion of the lumbar spine is 60 degrees. So we don't have the evidence that the doctor is pointing to. The doctor also points to the results of the MRI and the CT scan, or the x-rays of the cervical spine. The cervical spine x-rays show minimal degeneration. The MRI, as we've discussed, doesn't show impingement on any nerves. So there was just nothing backing up this doctor's finding, which appears to be on her first visit with this client. And the client did say that he only saw her once a while back. So it appears that this Dr. Berg, who was...
She succeeded to another doctor at this free clinic. That's why, actually, to call her a treating physician is almost a lot. She certainly doesn't have the psychological outlook that the agency thinks all treating physicians have of, you know, just writing whatever it takes for benefits. She's a very busy physician at a free clinic, right?
Definitely, Your Honor. But at the same point, the ALJ is entitled to consider the nature of the treating relationship in weighing the opinion. Certainly the appellant wants to criticize the examinations that are performed on a one-time consultative basis, but Dr. Berg only did an actual examination of this gentleman on one occasion, according to the claimant.
He says he saw her 7 or 8 times over a year and a half.
And there's no substantiation for that in the record. And also, I would point out that when he's asked about it at the hearing by the ALJ...
That's what the district court wrote.
On page 65, the ALJ asks Mr. Hoyt whether Dr. Berg had performed an actual examination of him. And he said yes once a while back. So... We're putting
What's an examination? I mean, if you go for a follow-up visit to a doctor, is that an examination or is that a visit?
If the doctor is not doing some sort of measurement of your functional capacity, of your limitations, of the way that your impairment is affecting your ability to function, that's not an examination. That's an interview. And that has a different weight to it than an actual physical examination that produces findings.
On the record page 55, which is what the district court cites, it seems to that's the cite to the 7 or 8 times. But I think that maybe we're having a vocabulary quibble here because lots of doctors have follow-up visits. They check. They see if the person's feeling any better. And a lay patient might not understand that to be an examination, quote unquote.
I appreciate that, Your Honor, and we would ask the court to affirm.
Anything further?
Yes, Your Honor, just a couple of points.
How many times did Mr. Hoyt see Dr. Berg, and were they examinations, or were they visits, or were they interviews, or what were they?
Your Honor, I don't know whether all of the examinations in which Dr. Berg treated my client involved the measured range of motion measurements as opposing counsel has requested. At the hearing, my client testified that he saw Dr. Berg 7 or 8 times. There are treatment notes in the record at pages 397 through 400 that document that he did see Dr. Berg in during the summer in 2008 after his treating physician, Dr. Dorsey, left the practice. And he continued to see her until the date of the hearing as documented in, you know, it should be noted that there are actually two sort of letters from Dr. Bird, one which is dated the residual functional capacity evaluation, which does appear to have been performed early on in her treatment of my client. But then again, in March of 2009, she documents, she again affirms her opinion that my client is significantly impaired. And it should be noted that in the interim, my client did undergo a lumbar MRI, which did show moderate to severe bilateral neuroforaminal narrowing, which is not a minimal objective finding. The state agency physicians on which the administrative law judge placed greater weight did not examine my client and based their opinions on that of Dr. Motiani, who did not have access to Hoyt's cervical MRI and whose report predates my client's 2008 lumbar MRI, and who also noted that my client had tenderness in his right trapezius, pain during rightward movements of his cervical spine, and spasm of his lumbar spine. Thus, to say that Dr. Motiani didn't observe any restrictions of my client is inaccurate. And therefore, I would ask this court to remand this case for consideration of whether my client is eligible for supplemental security income benefits.
All right, thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.